It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Before anyone asks, yes, this program is live, for it is the fourth day of September 2017. It's Labor Day in the United States of America. Happy Labor Day to you all. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. It's also Boss Man Wayne's birthday. If ever there was a more appropriate birthday combination between person and date, I don't know what it is. Well, okay, maybe Jesus on December 25th, but that never really actually happened. Here, however, we are celebrating the birthday of we're celebrating the birthday of the man who made the horn possible, who is as tireless an advocate for working people as there has ever been, who doesn't know the word quit, and who, frankly, it should be such that if you looked up progressive in the dictionary, see also liberal, there would be a picture of Boss Man Wayne. So happy birthday to Boss Man Wayne this fourth day of September 2017. Knowing Boss Man Wayne, he's out there doing something today, trying to make things better, as opposed to, like, you know, running around and raising hell and enjoying his birthday, because that's, you know, that's just how Boss Man Wayne is. Anyway, it's 3 minutes past the hour. It is Labor Day. This program is brought to you by Tremendous Turnips. Remember, if you don't like turnips, Tremendous Turnips has the nutritive power of an entire turnip truck in a single handful of capsules. Tremendous Turnips. To get all the nutritious goodness, all the turnipy wonderfulness that you've been missing out on. Tremendous Turnips, available only in capsule form at The Horn. Tremendous Turnips, your key to healthy living. Tremendous Turnips, it's for you. All kidding aside, The Horn exists on listener contributions. And thanks, many, many thanks to the many, many, not many, many, but still the significant number of subscribers at the first of the month. You know, we closed out Friday short by $100 on Bruce's Memorial Shirley's Challenge. And over the course of the weekend, the subscribers picked up the slack. The overnight crew, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night. And so, the following thanks are due. This program is not brought to you by Tremendous Turnips or Rockin' Rutabagas. No, it's brought to you. It's brought to you by people like Paul And Catherine. Thank you, Catherine. And Thomas. And Jules. Thank you. It's also brought to you by our buddy Terry. Okay. Thank you very, very kindly on the third of the month. Brought to you also by an anonymous contributor who prefers to remain that way. Brought to you by Janice in Wisconsin. Thank you, Janice. By John in Indiana. Thank you, John. Brought to you by Renee in D.C. Thank you, Renee. Brought to you by Stephen in California. Thank you, Stephen. And brought to you again by Terry. And then the final four by Jeffrey. Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you to Albert in North Carolina. Thanks to Elizabeth in New York. And thanks very kindly to Darren in California. That's who made up the difference and brought to you tonight's program. So thank you, one and all, for keeping progressive broadcasting going on the interweb tubes. I don't know. Should we? They're real. Should we work on some tremendous turnip capsules? Selling vitamins seems to be a real big thing. Yeah. Oh well. Nah. We probably no. But the idea, hey, you didn't just fall off the turnip truck. You've got tremendous turnips. See? Possibilities. Oh, yeah. It's also Moran Monday. It seems rather a shame to mix Moran Monday with Labor Day. But Labor Day falls on a Monday because it is a memorialization of the sacrifices of working people over the course of the centuries in this country. But we have Morans. Of course we do. Thank you. Thank you for the kind thoughts, Randy and PA. Labor Day is for grilling. I wish, says Randy, I wish you would take the night off, Bob. But I'm not. I can't because I said I would be here. And, you know, I did, I kind of had my Labor Day fun last night. You know, the Mountaineers didn't play until Sunday. So Saturday night I watched the Crimson Tide do what I expected them to do to Florida State. Although I didn't quite fully expect that whole second half, fourth quarter Florida State meltdown, but there it was. And the Mountaineers and the Gobblers, the Fighting Gobblers of Virginia Polytechnic Institute, they got together at FedEx Field in Landover, Maryland last night. And so that's what I kind of built my holiday weekend around. The grilling was good. The food was yummy. It was just Agnes and me. So, you know, wasn't a matter of putting on like some great big honking bunch of slabs of ribs or some giganto pork shoulder or anything. No. Some portobello mushroom caps and a little teeny tiny piece of beef and some baked potatoes on the smoker. And they were yummy. But, of course, the Mountaineers, pulled up a little bit short. and lost 31-24 to Virginia Tech. Never gave up. We're trying all the way to the very end. They were within 15 yards of tying it, but it just didn't work out. Sadly, this one appears to be that one. That loss looked like it was on the defense. But it was a damn good game. Exciting as hell. And so we run off into the college football season, which is what makes autumn worth living through. My, oh my, that was shallow, wasn't it? Yeah, especially for the international audience who couldn't care less about American football, college, or otherwise. Understood. So we find ourselves with a brand new Moran Monday and a Labor Day edition of the Horn, and a weekend absolutely chock-a-block with excitement and activity. Oi, 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 oi. In exciting activity that included the allegation, we know not whether it is true, of North Korea claiming that it has exploded a hydrogen bomb. Which, of course, is, Kim Jong Crazy Pants has sort of pushed his trolling of Donald Trump into a whole new level. And, of course, because Donald Trump's brain is hollowed out by the spirochetes, what there was of it to begin with, he doesn't just take the bait. He chomps down hard on the hook and then swims around with it for a while. And so once again, this is especially, I think, telling for people who remember and lived through the Cold War. You know, the Cold War wasn't in the front of your mind all the time. It was always there, but, you know, after the Cuban Missile Crisis and a couple of other little blips, there was a general understanding, at least that's the way it played out as I was growing up, that neither side particularly wanted to roast humanity on the planet. I don't think we can say that anymore, especially about Donald J. Trump. You know, he likes things big and flashy and showy. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Did I do that part? Okay, well, I have now. And you get the idea that he'd really, really like to see what it looks like when a thermonuclear device goes off, as long as he was on the giving end and not the receiving. Well, Kim Jong Crazy Pants, nobody's really particularly sure what game he's playing, although it's September, and that means it's going to start getting right cold on the Korean Peninsula, and of course, he can barely feed his people, and not very particularly good at keeping them warm in winter either, not that he much cares. And as a consequence, it's hard not to notice that when he starts saber rattling in late summer, early autumn, that it probably means he would like to have a few boatloads of fuel and food. Because he can, he controls the wealth of the nation, such as it is, and he can get pretty much anything he wants to, including visits from, Dennis Rodman, if he wants. But that's him, and that's the interior cadre, the leadership class of the alleged classless society that, but not so much for a general populace, right? So it's hard not to see this as a desperate bid for dinner. Oh, okay. Well, that works. Clarity says, "Who are you?" You are a pawn in the leftist progressive agitprop ploy by FSB, working in a subcontract to a black bag op. How's that? That's a mouthful. How's that? Mm-hmm. So, the last couple of days have been another series of those mornings where you wake up wondering if some portion of the planet has been, hopelessly radiated. And so far, so good. But it's not helpful when people like Nimrata Haley, who wasn't particularly good at being a governor in South Carolina, and consequently was demoted upward to being the United States ambassador to the United Nations, sits there this morning and says, North Korea is practically begging for war. Do you read it that way? Because I don't. It looks more like they're trying to manipulate the situation so as to retain a tenuous grasp on power, pinched between the economic engine that is South Korea and their, overlords to the north in China. So it's anybody's guess where this goes. I know we want to talk about, no. Here's a question. This is the central question for me. Is there an anti-war movement in the United States anymore? I mean, Code Pink's still out there. But really, is there an anti-war movement in the United States anymore? We can talk about that later in the program if you want to. I remember when the entire world mobilized, quite impressively, really, before George W. Bush, perpetrated his bloody and illegal attack upon the innocent people of Iraq. And then it just seemed to fizzle. I guess it didn't help that all that pressure didn't amount to much, and he went ahead with his, he and Count Dicula and Paul Wolfowitz and the whole gang of filthy criminals went ahead with their illegal war against the innocent people of Iraq. Did that demoralize the anti-war movement, the anti-war left, whatever you want to call it? I don't know. But if there is one, this might be a pretty good time to, mobilize it. Isaac wants me to turn up my mic. I have no clipping here. When I turn up my mic, you will have clipping, and then I'll get emails saying, oh my God, I can't stand the clipping. So I'm afraid we're going to have to stay right where we are. Because there's just not a whole lot to be done. Sorry, Isaac. But I think in the midst of all of the Sturm und Drang, the he said of Trump versus Kim Jong Crazy Pants, it might be well to ask ourselves the question as to, do we have an anti-war movement that can mobilize and at least voice opposition to the idea of trying to gin up a nice, it was not even a nice new war. It's just sort of a reboot of an old one. on the Korean Peninsula. And there was a lot of non-helpfulness. Jim Mattis is saying that the goal is not annihilation, but that we have the ability to do that. I don't know. Do we have the ability to annihilate North Korea? Do we have the ability to annihilate North Korea without using nuclear weapons? We couldn't even conquer Iraq. We still can't seem to finish Afghanistan, even though Afghanistan is the longest war in the entire history of the United States. 16 years and more now. Or coming up on 16 years. By the way, over on, what was it, Netflix? I watched the Brad Pitt vehicle produced by Netflix called War Machine. It was not a great film. It was not an awful film. I couldn't tell if it wanted to be Dr. Strangelove or Patton. But it did point up the ridiculousness of our ongoing misadventure in South Asia. And now, of course, we're going to send more soldiers to South Asia, and one wonders, and this is sort of the genesis of it, where the hell's the anti-war movement? And I don't have an answer to that. Did it take the starch out of the anti-war movement when Barack Obama said early on in his candidacy that he always thought that Iraq was stupid, but Afghanistan was the right war for the right reasons? Because from where I sat, that one looked pretty stupid, too. Nah, but whatever. It's Labor Day, not Memorial Day or Veterans Day. Damn it. It's Labor Day. And frankly, well, if you really, really want a good Labor Day, about labor show, I highly commend to you my buddy Rick Smith's program for today. He did a dandy, an absolute dandy. Ron in Raleigh, with the subject line, "Damn it," says, "These people are hungry enough to eat the ass end of a wooden hobby horse. Plus, in a couple of months, they'll be colder than a well digger's posterior. They always act better when they're warm and fed." Well, yeah. Okay, thank you, Robert, in Australia. I was just saying, you sound fine here in Australia. Everybody's got different equipment, so everybody responds differently, I suppose. I've just been trying to send out a non-over-modulated broadcast. So that's where that is. So we got North Korea, which is unsettling. Because honest to God, is there anybody within the sound of my voice who thinks that Trump is really, really sane enough to make intelligent decisions about foreign policy? Because I don't. And frankly, I think some of the Trumpanzees think he's nuts too, but they're happy about that. Because they're not particularly screwed down very tightly themselves. Witness their hissy of the day. It comes from it comes from something that got started with NPR, and it's more than a little bit baffling. Let me see if I can just sort of give a brief précis of this latest maggot hissy. Like I said, it begins with a National Public Radio story this morning. And it's a story with which the subject of which is probably familiar to most of the people listening to this program. It's a lesson I've learned the hard way over the years, because a lot of this job is sedentary, sitting and reading. And you can't really do a whole lot of reading while you're, you know, off on your 12-mile run of the morning. You kind of got to be, you know, sedentary. And then the 3 hours of this program, sedentary. And so one must make oneself get out and get active. And a particular subset of the population is who this NPR story was aimed at. The name of the piece was called "Get Off the Couch, Baby Boomers, or You May Not Be Able to Later." Now, I hear that, and I'm pretty clear what the message is. Don't just sit there. Do something. Get off the couch, baby boomers, that you may not be able to later. Urging an aging segment of the population to keep moving, keep being active, or risk not being able to. But that wasn't the way the maggots heard it. You know, the Make America Great Again Trumpansy scum. There was a hashtag, and it began to trend. And the hashtag was "Get Off the Couch, Baby Boomers." And so naturally, the Trumpansies began doing what Trumpansies do most, screeching and howling and flinging feces. And it's all, it just got, it got all over Twitter. So now the Democrat Party slogan is "Get off the couch, baby boomers." Typical, demand others who worked, built, suffered, do more for them. Get off the couch, baby boomers. No, get off the dole, you 68er fuckers. Did most to run up debt and ruin our culture. We owe you nothing! Get off the couch, baby boomers. Turn off the lobotomy box, liberals.
Oh, really? A suggestion as simple as it's a good idea for aging Americans to keep active and keep busy and not just sit there and sort of descend into decrepitude. Something as simple as that becomes a political battle? Really? Yes, really. It's that bad.
in this country. Like it was an insult.
Why didn't they say get off the couch, millennials?
Well, maybe because it was a, it was a story about the particularized risks of being sedentary when you're in middle age or late middle age. That's how, that's how paranoid and privileged, angry the maggots are. Everything's about them. Jesus, it's like Carly Simon singing "You're So Vain," only with Metamucil. Just pathetic.
Get off the couch, baby boomers. We did get off the couch and elected POTUS. What we need is the millennials to get out of their basements.
Poor little snowflakes. Yes, Hoghead, yes. In the chat room, you're right. The butt hurt runs deep. It does. Go figure.
We owe you nothing. We'll sit here on our couches. You goddamn libtards.
Oh, the stupid it hurts is us. But these are the people who are... Yeah, there you go. There you go, Clarity. It's the nanny state telling you to be a health Nazi. All right. And it's a... Oh, see, there we go. Subject line. Now, Bob, when you imitate maggots, you get clipping. Now get a standing desk while you still can. Thank you, Horst. That's been something I've thought about for a long time. Having a studio that I... Because I love to walk around. Something like this. In a situation like this. It'd be great to have a standing desk and some pacing room and maybe one of those Joel Osteen head-worn mics. We've got those. I just couldn't ever get them to sound good. But yeah, I get the idea. Steve in New York, and they call us snowflakes. Oh, they're just perennially butthurt. Everything is about them. Everything is a direct insult of them. Steve did point out, I don't agree. I think the Trump pansies don't care. He's nuts because. If it at least pisses off the liberals, that's enough for them.
Yeah, I'm not going to get off. I'm not going to get off the couch. Because it makes little libtards, millennials, all angry. Oh.
Randy wants to know, but with a standing desk, where would you put your studio bedpan? How did you know? No, I'm kidding. Meanwhile, Scott with an email, he took dictation from Punky. It's like that old joke, the punchline of which is, nah, the mouse is a ventriloquist. He's doing it all. Never mind. To rephrase your query about what Trump might do, how about this? How reality-based is he in terms of how to proceed regarding North Korea? Based on what we know or should know by now, Trump is essentially a mindless chicken hawk and bullshit artist. He's beyond useless in terms of saying or doing the appropriate thing in response to any situation one cares to name. Unless one or more adults in the room can manage to hold a very tight rein on him, what the world is in for will not be pretty, which I think is another way of Scott saying something he said a few weeks back. We're screwed. But who wants to live that way? Who wants to live walking around going, ah, we're screwed? Because it's a hell of a thing to have to try to internalize and live with. I mean, for Pete's sake, you want to talk about inappropriate? He went back to the Texas Gulf Coast this weekend. Comrade Kumquat did. And while he was down there, thousands of people without homes, living in shelters, temporary, you know, at best, food, certainly not a certainty, cars, people who had to have a car to get to work, you know, because it's the 21st century, right? And the very definition of Houston is sprawl. And he actually went down there and was caught on a live mic telling people to have a good time. I wish to goodness I was kidding.
Well, yeah, your home's gone and your life's a wreck, but have a good time.
Wow. It couldn't have looked worse if he'd just gone and hung out with Joel Osteen. And by the way, just Joel Osteen, because it's More End Monday, right? Joel Osteen, and I wish I was kidding, but Joel Osteen actually told the people of Houston from inside his 17,000-seat megachurch that God, it's not prayer meeting Wednesday, it's More Ann Monday. Believe me, please, this qualifies as More Ann. He told them God was going to pay them back. Now, I'm sure you could check in with some other gospel sharps and holiness hustlers, and they would say that, well, it's already been said, right? The hurricane itself was payback. But no. Joel Osteen says that God is going to pay back everybody for what they lost. And this, I guess, I don't want to get all Bible-y, but you kind of gotta have some context to work with a story like this. This is, and I don't even know this is a word, this is Jobian, okay? You know the story of Job. Job is this real holy Job, and he's rich as shit, and he's got a wife and a whole bunch of daughters and a whole bunch of sons and oodles of slaves and tons of herds of goats and chickens and camels and cattle and no pigs, but he's rich beyond measure, And so the devil and Yahweh sit down to brunch one day and come up with a bet. God says that Job's righteous. The devil says, nah, Job's only righteous because you've given him such a sweet life. And God, just taking the bait and chomping down hard on the hook, says, oh, yeah? And the devil says, yeah. He says, okay, well, do whatever you want to Job. Just don't take his life. And he'll still praise me. And so, you know, the devil goes down and starts just causing God-awful things to happen. You know, he kills off all of his sons, kills off all of his daughters, scatters his herds, kills his servants, there's tornadoes and all kinds of shit. And Job continues to worship God. And so they have brunch again, the devil and God. And God says, see, he never cursed me. It wasn't just because you took away everything he had and he didn't curse me. He says, yeah, but that's because you wouldn't let me touch him. And once again, the hook's there. God chomps on it. And away we go. He's like Billy Bass. You know, Timmy the Trout. And so Job goes down and the devil goes down and gives Job boils. That's happening. That happens all the time in the Old Testament. All kinds of people. You know, God gets mad at you, you get boils. They hurt. Or he strikes you blind, you know, because he's the God of love. And sometimes you just have to beat the love into them. But in the end, he still doesn't curse God. But he says, you know, I really would like to know why this shit happened to me. This really sucks. And so God appears in a whirlwind and comes down and tells Job, well, you know, I did it to you because I could. Because I'm God. Yeah. Because I wanted to. Yeah. And he says, let me make it up to you. And so he gets a whole new, he and his wife, he didn't kill the wife either, even though she was looking at him going, yeah, why don't you curse God and die? Yeah, thanks. And all of his buddies were like, you know, you pissed off God somewhere along the way. But he gives him back more sons, more daughters, more goats, more camels, more sheep, more chickens, no pigs! More slaves, more outbuildings, what have you. And Job's supposed to be happy about that. And so that's kind of what Joel Osteen's talking about when he says, God will pay back Houston. But there are a whole lot of dead people, and Joel Osteen really can't say that God will pay them back. Hell, Joel Osteen doesn't even know if they were saved. And if they weren't, well, tough titty. But I always wondered, you know, when I was busy being dipped by the heel in all this religious monstrosity and nonsense. Yeah, sure, Job got new sons and new daughters and new everything. But being human and having a memory, do you think he accepted that as payment in full for everything that had been taken from him for the hell of it? Did the boils not leave any scars? Did he ever miss his daughters? Did he ever miss the sons that Almighty God just let be arbitrarily killed? Once he was told that God did it just because he could, did he come to the conclusion that God was a real bastard? Just an arbitrary prick. Because it's hard to imagine a human being not. But Joel Osteen says, God's going to pay you back. He said, we're not going to understand everything that happens, but having a poor old me mentality or look what I lost or why did this happen, you know, that's just going to pull you down. Turn it over to God. God won't allow it unless he has a purpose for you. We may not see it at the time, but that's what faith is all about. Having faith lets God turn things around. He's got you in the palm of his hand. He's working on your behalf right now, behind the scenes. He's lining up things in your favor. And then this. And the fact that, well, yesterday there weren't, usually there's 15, 17,000 people in his little tax-exempt the medicine show. Yesterday, there were only a couple of thousand. A lot of empty seats. And he lost nothing in all of this. And his church lost nothing in all of this. But he tells people who have lost everything, so let's don't have a victim mentality. Let's have a restoration mentality. Lord, we thank you that you're going to pay back what belongs to us. Really? Pay back? So God's a thief. Yeah. Don't have a victim mentality. That's some sure enough, no kidding, chutzpah is what that is. Yeah, Steve noting. Spoken like a guy with a 17,000-square-foot church who lost nothing in the hurricane. Bless his little pea-picking heart. Boils. That's all I got to say. Boils. I generally don't sit around wishing, because, A, wishing is not much use. But some of that Old Testament justice, I mean, what if... Is it too much to ask for the some of that good old Yahweh love and justice to be visited on Joel Osteen? Because he's about where Job was. He's got everything. Everything he could possibly want. Yeah, granted, he's not rich like. He's not Kenneth Copeland rich. He's not $750 million rich. He's just a little pissant double-digit millionaire. But still. Did the devil and God stop talking? Oh, wait, neither of them are real. I'm sorry. Never mind. But he, would he keep praising God if he had a good dose of boils? How about a righteous, well, you never know. I was going to say, how about a righteous case of the clap, but oh well. You know, he probably thinks, if he actually believes this baloney at all, he probably thinks that the fact that his church didn't flood has something to do with the favor of the Almighty. That he drowned others but spared that basketball arena because of something they did. When in fact it was something they did. They built flood walls around it because the place had flooded in the past. That was one of his excuses for not opening the doors of his church. Well, I mean, we almost flooded. Yeah. Our buddy Horst, under the subject line Alternative Prayer, asks, "Hey, Bob, how long you reckon it'll be before these Christians are ready to hear the message, 'It's about time we paid God back'? Think of it. We could declare war on heaven." That's almost too terrifying to ponder. Of course, most of this is not surprising, as our buddy Dennis in Kentucky, my lawn mowing buddy, points out. A recent survey, they do these every so often, and they're really, really handy when they do it. I should probably save this for prayer meeting Wednesday, but most Christians don't even understand their own doctrine, which is to say, they don't understand their own religion. Oh, well. So, you know, that's just a little Harvey update. Irma, meanwhile, is out there blazing away in the Atlantic, bearing down on the Leeward Isles. Hurricane, and storm warnings out for Puerto Rico. And various projections showing it, maybe spinning off and doing nothing in the North Middle Atlantic. Or, you know, slapping the bejesus out of Florida or South Carolina. Or just churning on into the Gulf. Which would be almost unthinkable. But in the midst of all of that, well, you know, the right-wing, well-funded, and it's all tax-free, hallelujah, never misses Right wing never misses a well-funded opportunity to try to make sure we get more of the same. And by the way, note coming from Bill, on your current topic, Trump and his Trumpansies are not sane. I have a few relatives and friends who voted for the guy. I can't talk politics with most of them. It does sound like to them that I'm saying to them, you're so vain. Yeah. I know. I haven't talked in a while about some of the weird crap that winds up in my inbox. But this one sort of grabbed me. Hello, Mr. Kincaid. Well, hello. Who the hell are you? Possible segment, Hurricane Harvey, what climate superstition looks like. Oh, really? Hurricane Harvey caused a historic disaster and record rainfalls, but the event is once again being used to promote climate change superstition. Thousands and thousands of scientists engaged in superstition. I think our boy here doesn't know the difference between superstition and science. These editorials perpetuate... he cites a Politico editorial. Harvey is what climate change looks like. NPR concluded how a warmer climate helped shape Harvey. Still mad at NPR. CNN chipped in with, did climate change impact Hurricane Harvey? These editorials perpetuate the myth
that if we change our light bulbs, build wind turbines, and drive electric cars, we can make the storms and hurricanes less frequent and severe. Actually, if you go and, because I did, you go and read each one of those articles, there's not a goddamn word about how if we drive electric cars, change our light bulbs, and build wind turbines, that there won't be any more hurricanes. We're well past that. Hurricanes are a fact of life, especially hurricanes, typhoons, monsoons. You know, it's a wet planet. It's a wet, windy planet. It's a wet, windy, warm planet. It's a wet, windy, warm, living planet. You know, not a dead planet like Mars. And so stuff is going to move. Things are going to heat up, cool down, Earth rotates. But the little critters living on it have managed to contribute to some of what's happening on it. A simple look at history shows that Hurricane Harvey and this year's hurricane season are not out of the ordinary. The Great Galveston Hurricane of 1900 was a Category 4 storm when it struck Galveston and Houston in September of 1900, claiming 800 lives, the most deadly hurricane in U.S. history. In 1933, five hurricanes made U.S. landfall, including two Category 3 storms. Your neighbor's sport utility vehicle was not the cause of Hurricane Harvey. What a dipshit. The guy's name is Steve Gorham, by the way. I'm the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition, a non-political association of scientists, engineers, and citizens working to inform Americans about the realities of climate science and energy economics.
Ah. See, if you read that carefully, you'll find out where the money's coming from. Scientists, engineers, and citizens inform and energy economics. Anybody want to guess? Anybody want to guess where his funding comes from? Energy economics.
I'm a public speaker, a frequent guest on radio and TV, an independent columnist.
Yeah, well, you know, as independent as that, those checks you cash will let you be, buddy.
I'm a former engineer and business executive. I've got an MBA from the University of Chicago.
Well, we're just learning more and more about you, aren't we, Steve? The good old University of Chicago. A place that is still haunted by the dead hand of Milton Friedman. Fuck the workers first, everything else will be okay. He bills himself as a researcher. And then, of course, as Sparky notes, there's what is getting some coverage, but not enough. The massive, massive wildfires and completely out of hand heat, which, as Tracy pointed out last week, is out of character. For this time of year, for even Southern California. Everything is part of it. And that's part of the fraud that people like the Steve Gorham character perpetrate. Oh, your neighbor's SUV, as if somebody's going out and, you know, letting the air out of a Chevy Suburban, thinking that it'll make climate change go away. It won't. But the subtlety, the evil subtlety of his message is that nothing any individual can do makes any difference, because, after all, climate change isn't real. It's a superstition, you know, just like Christianity and Islam and Judaism and Jainism and Hinduism right? And they've been very successful with that, trying to equate science, scientific inquiry, scientific knowledge with religious belief. I don't believe in climate change. I acknowledge its reality because the science is demonstrable. And by the way, that monster hurricane that hit Houston and Galveston in the early 1900s, yeah, we were already doing a Jim Dandy job of working on heating up the planet then. Because the Industrial Revolution was well underway by then. And there was shit tons, that's a scientific term, of coal being burned all over the planet. Nasty old coal. So it's this is all just a starting place, and I got other stuff that's not necessarily related to, well, I got other stuff, okay? And, of course, I don't know, maybe you'd like to engage in some conversation this evening. I don't know who all, I don't know who all's been live today. So if you're, if you've just got a bee that's stinging the bee Jesus out of your little old haid under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle or whatever, yeah, let's talk. 304-574-8178. Or Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. It's entirely up to you. A note coming in from David in South Carolina, Stan. Subject line, brilliant. We literally have Donald Trump devotees commenting on weather sites about how forecasts are fake news because the projected path changes from update to update. Well, I wish I could say, gee, you're kidding. But that doesn't surprise me at all. It's probably
fake weather.
And, of course, West Virginia being the Trumpiest state in the union, I'm sure that was a fake football game last night, too. And the fake sports media, never mind. So we'll take a little break and see what's on your mind, and we'll chat a little when we come back. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yesterday it was my birthday. I hung one more year on the line. I should be depressed. My life's a mess, but I'm having a good time. Ooh, I've been loving and loving, loving. I'm exhausted from loving so well. I should go to bed, but a voice in my head says, oh, what the hell? Have a good time. Have a good time. Have a good time, baby. Have a good time. Paranoia strikes deep in the heartland, but I think it's all overdone. Exaggerating this, exaggerating that, they don't have no fun. And I don't believe what I read in the paper. Just out to capture my dime. I ain't worrying and I ain't scurrying. I'm having a good time. Have a good time. Have a good time. Mankind, can be done. So God bless the goods we was given, and God bless the U.S. today, and God bless our standard of living. Let's keep it that way, and we'll all have a good time.
Good time, baby.
Have a good time.
You know, that may very well have been the perfect bumper. It tied the whole hour together, didn't it? Paul Simon, have a good time. It is 6 minutes past the hour. Let's run out to the Great Northwest and check in with Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
That must be me.
It is you.
Oh, wow. It's a clear day, and it looks like we're in Shanghai or something today here with all the forest fires and the smoke.
Is that traveling north toward you, to all the way up
it's
to
all,
you?
It's, or all around, it's all around me where we're at now. We have fires east and west of us. And the saddest grief I've felt this week was the Eagle Creek fire in the middle of the gorge. And it's going towards the city of Cascade Locks right now. But Eagle Creek was a beautiful trail. And the watershed for Cascade Locks, which they almost gave away to Nestle. But I'm sure it'll be affected by all this loss of, you know, cover and forest there. But it was started by some kids out camping, teenagers, set off some fireworks.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, and it's, you know, super high fire danger. I mean, what were they thinking? Anyway, there was 150 hikers. I mean, that's how, you know, heavily it's used, because it's one, two exits out of Portland. Even, I think, before the, no, it's after Multnomah Falls. But so they had to evacuate 150 hikers, which got trapped. They couldn't come back down on that side. They had to take them up over the top. And now they may have to evacuate the city of Cascade Locks, which is, you know, right in the heart of the gorge.
How many people?
Oh, I think about 2,000. But, you know, it's rainforest. It's kind of temperate rainforest there in the gorge.
Right. But and, but it's temperate rainforest that is, as rainforests go, unnaturally dry?
Yes. And, yeah, same as what happened in British Columbia. Everything was really dry and a lot of fuel. So they had the worst fire season they've had. 41 years, I think they said.
So it's around, it's on either side of you in the Great Northwest and variously extending down to, what are we calling the fire in L.A.? Is it Latuna?
Oh, I don't even know. The fire that kind of concerns me, I mean, they're all bad, but the one that's in Southwest Oregon, in the Umpqua National Forest, is, you know, some of the last stands of old growth. And it's just sad to see that area go, you know.
And when we're talking about old growth on the in the Northwest, we're talking about old.
Yeah, yeah, we're talking about 300 to 1,000 year old trees.
Jesus. Yeah, Sparky informs me it's the whole West Coast.
Yeah, it's all the way from Northern California all the way to they have fires now on I-90, Cle Elum on the east side of Snoqualmie Pass, which they said today it could, you know, run up around where they had the big burn last year in Wenatchee, because that's the way the prevailing winds are going right now.
And because I'm so painfully unfamiliar with the region, there is a fire season, right?
Yeah, but it starts almost a month earlier now than it did 20 years ago, and it runs a month. You know, it's basically 2 months longer now. And there was an article on the CBC about the stress that the BC firefighters have undergone, you know, mental health and, you know, just the physical stress of, you know, fighting fires of that, you know, that size for so long in the BC interior.
So this does seem to you to be out of the ordinary.
Yes, it does. And also, it's in all these places that you kind of look to as being kind of sanctuaries, you know, of beauty and peace and nature. Like 2 years ago when the Calistoga burned there. You know, I had so many memories of getting up there and in the redwoods and stuff, and, you know, it was all burnt flat. And that, you know, it's going to take 30, 50, 100 years if it ever, you know, comes back.
And frankly, because of the focus, because of the focus on Harvey, this is getting short shrift, but some of the numbers are quite stunning. There are, Sparky provided this to me, there are 74 major wildfires burning in Washington, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Nevada, Utah, Wyoming, and California. 74. And in point of fact, the air quality in Spokane, according to the Air Quality Index, has reached a level known as very unhealthy.
It's that way in the valley too, around Medford, and in on the east side of the mountains, Bend, Madras area too. So yeah, either side of the Cascades, they've got stuff up above 300 parts per million particles.
And I mean that's don't go outside kind of stuff, right?
It's really not healthy. They're saying, you know, limit your time outdoors, and you know, don't do anything that's really heavy, strenuous, because it's bad for your heart to be breathing that stuff deep, you know. And you've seen my pictures I post sometimes in the morning.
I have, and there's been a certain amount of grief that has been apparent in those.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the benefits of living in Eastern Oregon, is you do have a lot of bright, sunshiny, clear blue sky days. And being light sensitive, you know, it does help with my depression and things, you know. I mean, we do get inversions in the winter, and we do get rain, but it doesn't last like it does, you know, in Seattle or Portland. So my winter depression is not nearly as bad here.
But it's
heavy. Yeah, it's just, I mean, today the light is just about the same as it was, you know, 20 minutes before the eclipse.
Wow. That's pretty profound.
Yeah, and I could, you know, I can tell by, you know, my automatic setting on my camera. It tells, you know, how much, you know, where the setting is for it. So I can tell kind of the degree of shade that's being produced by the fires.
Wow.
But this, you know, you've seen pictures where I get the sun just barely cracking over the horizon.
Right.
This morning it was almost 20 minutes after the official sunrise before you could even see anything that looked like the sun.
That's profound.
Yeah, and then there's this orange disk until almost noon today. So the cloud cover or the smoke cover is deep too.
Did it reduce temperatures any?
Yeah, we were having a quote unquote heat alert plus the haze alert. Now it's just a haze alert because it's below 100 degrees. But it isn't cooling down. It's staying in the 60s at night. And in the desert, that's kind of unusual.
And it's bad enough. Sparky tells me that kids in schools are having to stay indoors. He said, my neighbor's son said it sucked to be inside a small gym with 100 kids at break time.
Oh, the smell. Oh, the smell.
Well, oh, the frustration.
That too, yeah.
There's a reason for recess. They got to burn some of that stuff off.
Yeah, and killer ball is a winter sport, not a fall sport.
Yes, it is, but especially we always loved to play that with volleyballs because they were lighter and you could really get some good velocity going with them.
We played with those little red balls.
Yeah, the little red rubber ones, right?
Yeah,
but
and,
they were heavier. The volleyballs, man, those things would cook.
No, our coach, you know, he had. I don't know. He had certain ethics, you know, but he was an old Marine. And whenever we get into a fight, he had this thing where he would give them each one boxing glove. And then they had to hang on to a towel with the other hand. And the guy that dropped let go of the towel lost.
It sounds very Marine.
Yeah, well, that's. It's a man's world, you know, that I grew up in here.
I'm surprised you didn't sing that.
Oh, but no, I'm saving my James Brown voice for Thursday.
Oh, gig?
Yeah, first Thursday at the Cozy.
Nice.
But anyway, that's not why I called today.
No?
No, I wanted to talk about a tragic healthcare issue. I was asked to play music or just to be there for a memorial. And all I did was just kind of hold the presence there. And anyway, this woman, her fiancé, 41 years old, they had a fight over his drinking. And he had just been discharged from ER. He was suicidal 2 days before, and they discharged him less than 24 hours after admission. And they had a fight because she was upset they couldn't pay their bills. He had a drinking problem, and she told him to get his ass, you know, get to work. They had a fight, and then he lost his temper and actually assaulted her, I guess. And she called the police, and he ran out in the street and got hit and died on the scene right in front of her.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway, she insisted on running the service. And I just, you know, my heart went out to her, and I started crying, and then it was just like, you know, I don't know these people intimately. So I, you know, went through that, and I went to my Buddhist practice of just being present and being non-attached. Because I wasn't there, you know, I was just there to support her, you know, and hold the space. But I was so angry when my friend that asked me to do it for her, her best friend, when I heard the whole story, because I didn't know. I kind of walked into it just, you know, I'll be here of service. And I said my mantras, you know, for that soul to be carried through the bardo, you know, and hopefully they will not lose their, you know, fortune of, you know, and be born because they took a hasty exit. You know, I'm just what I've been taught about Buddhism is that, you know, when you're at the point of death, you carry that fear or whatever. But I was so angry because, once again, you know, I live here in this side of the country where it's okay to drink yourself to death, self-medicate. He should have been put into treatment. But we don't have treatment on demand in Oregon. They do in Washington.
See, that was the question I was leading up to. You know, so there was no help to be had.
Well, apparently he wasn't violent enough, crazy enough, psychotic enough for them to put him on a 72-hour hold. Okay. In other words, when he sobered up and got to his senses, he talked him into letting him go. And guess what? The cop that took him to the ER was the cop that came on the call when he died. So I think the police officer probably will have something to think about, you know, how he handled it. And how he described it, you know, his report had something to do with the man's ability to get out of the ER. So, yeah, four kids, two from her previous marriage and two from his previous marriage. So, yeah, it was very sad, Bob. And
no, it's horrifying. The
stat that's sad is that the number one cause of death now in the United States, under 50 males, is suicide.
That is probably, I'm guessing that's valid.
Yeah. And they really don't have any type of a strategy for reducing it. I know UK is talking about a zero tolerance for suicide. I think that's an admirable goal. Because how many of these people, how many of these Kurt Cobains and stuff, you know, we lose half of their productivity. We lose, you know, half of their genius when they get their lives cut short like this. You know, it really is a labor issue, you know.
let's get hold of the folks over there at the University of Chicago School of Business. Jesus, yeah. It is.
And depression, you know, is what the second or third leading cause of disability and lost work time. But yet we cut our mental health programs and our support for families that are in crisis to the bone.
And I don't want to sound like some Scientologist or something, Clarity, but let me ask you a question. I'm not one of these people who believes that all medication is bad, 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 bad.
No.
But there's a difference between recognizing a problem and saying, oh, let's come up with a pill for that, and recognizing a problem and asking, why does the problem exist? And I think, and I just, this idea won't leave me alone. I think that there's an argument to be had that there's something culturally wrong that leads that pushes people into these circumstances. I mean, suicide has always been around. Well, at least within sedentary society and within the historical record. But
it's not apparent that some of the causes of it have been. And I don't, so when you put people, well, I mean, I would be interested in a statistical breakdown of, say, suicide in Denmark or suicide in Sweden or versus, say, suicide in the United States or the UK. Do you think those numbers are similar, or do you think there's a difference?
You know, I think that more Western countries tend to have higher, but then India has a pretty high suicide rate. The thing I wanted to say also, though, as far as cause and effect, whatever, was during the service, she would reminisce about stuff, and then every once in a while something would pop through, and I didn't exactly know what she was talking about at the time, and then afterwards I kind of processed it. She said, don't ever, you know, fight over the bills. If you have love, if you, you know, you care about each other, don't fight over, you know, getting the bills paid, which I realize now was she felt guilty for nagging him about getting, you know, getting to work so they could, you know, hold their head up and they wouldn't have to, you know, fight with overdue stuff and jump from this to that to keep their electricity on, feed their kids, you know.
Yeah, and I don't know if she knew it, Clarity, but the fact of the matter is more marriages, I read this somewhere, maybe it's valid, maybe it's not, more marriages in this country fall apart over financial issues than they do over couples falling out of love or somebody decides to go out a romping or any other cause.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also it's kind of the tug between what we're told is the American dream. You know, we see all these programs about makeovers and all this stuff that's middle class. And the middle class is really a pretty small strata of our society now. So people that are working class, if they're not, you know, able to get this car or this or that, then they feel like they're failures. And then they feel, you know, inadequate, ashamed, especially men that, quote unquote, can't be good providers. You know, things like that.
Right. And think all the way back to the think all the way back to the lyric. And you know, it's a million years ago now. To the lyric of Satisfaction, and that's, you know, that's the Stones talking about the same notion, and the entirety of advertising, which is one of the reasons I'm glad there's no advertising here, is to make people want things or feel bad about themselves if they don't have things. You know, you could be far healthier and more handsome, more lovely, more beautiful. Your breath would be sweeter if only you took Super Beats. Okay?
Well, and we kind of make fun of people who don't have anything. We think that it's okay to make fun of people that are poor, that beg, that are, you know, whatever, can't pay for what, you know, a normal person should have. And
instead of asking the question, why don't we provide a basic minimum income so that people can have a basic minimum existence? You see what I'm saying? I'm not saying that's all anybody needs, but why in a so-called enlightened modern society do we not attend to the basic needs for, you know, the Maslow stuff, you know, the food, clothing, shelter?
Enlightened society. Okay.
Yeah, right. Now, I know.
No, we're just fed, you know, if you're not, back to what I said, if you're not at ease with, you know, getting enough, then you should be improving yourself, and you're just not investing properly, or, you know, whatever it is that's not making you healthy, wealthy, and, you know, a millionaire, then if you're anything short of that, you should be striving, you know, to uplift yourself. And the churches are even preaching this, you know, the prosperity ministry. But the television is promoting it. And, the, you know, the way that, you know, our class structure is being stratified, used against us, you know. The Black Lives Matter is kind of a economic thing, as much as integrated with the color thing. It's economics and color, you know.
Well, okay, so, yeah, so from the perspective of where I live, you know, Appalachia, over the last year or so, people have gone gaga over this book called Appalachian Elegy by a guy named J.D. Vance, who tells this touching and all too typical story of his Appalachian upbringing, and then begins to piss and moan because he thinks the hillbillies have too many televisions, too many clothes, and eat too much food. No shit. No, they're
luxuries.
They're wasting their money on, okay. But in an internet connected world, is it where more and more, I mean, you can't, there are many places where you cannot go in and apply for a damn job, Clarity. You have to do it online. I mean, I saw one instance, my son was applying for a job as a clerk at a Rippy Mart, okay? And it came with a list of questions that was more in-depth than the MMPI, for God's sakes. And it was just...
Well, without paying somebody to administer the test to them.
Oh, it was all just there online. And again, that's for a crummy minimum wage job that you're not even going to get 40 hours a week on.
Yeah, but it's kind of like the Tom Cruise movie. They're trying to decide if you're a criminal before they hire you.
Yeah, okay, yeah, they are. But the larger point is that you can't apply for that job without a computer. So J.D. Vance is gonna bitch at the hillbillies for trying to have computers and trying to have internet.
Well, that same mentality is the ones that want to bring back means testing. You know, if you haven't sold everything except for your blood, you know, you don't get a food card.
Well, and there are places in this country, Clarity, where it's not a matter of bringing it back, but maintaining it. In the states that don't have the Medicaid expansion, the Confederacy, for instance.
Yeah.
If you've got a cardboard box to live in, you're too rich for Medicaid.
Yeah.
I mean, it's. Is there any better? Means testing is mean.
Absolutely.
And you'd think to hear these right wingers talk that there's nobody out there who's poor who's actually working, which just means that they've never had to actually work. I just had a note from Randy in PA saying you have to be making about $50,000 a year to maintain a decent living standard, and that is on a consistent basis, which is not feasible for most people nowadays, which goes back to that shrinking middle class thingy.
Yep. Yeah.
And this, the, you know, as long as, you know, there are differing philosophies. You know, Bernie's big on the fight for 15, and I support that. I think the minimum wage should be goddamn $20 an hour, but then again, I'm a commie, right? But I also think that that there's another way to approach it, and that is to say, look, you're going to have food, clothing, and shelter, and that is your birthright as an American. Because it's absolutely nonsensical to think that we would live in a country of this size and of this much wealth and not guarantee that to every person here. You know, homelessness, and I've heard the argument, well, you know, those people are crazy and they just don't want to live somewhere. They want to be out on the street. You know, fight me.
Yeah.
I don't mean you. But it's just ex post facto reverse justification for just how shitty we treat people in this country.
Well, and that's just it. It's kind of the cow prod in the rear, you know, to follow the carrot. Don't look back. Don't look side to side. You know, just keep following that carrot because sooner or later you're going to get a good scratch ticket or, you know, you name it, this, you know, you're
going
to...
And you're right, and your days of being a temporarily embarrassed millionaire are going to be over.
Yeah. You, too, can be queen for a day.
We are not amused.
But I get that, and... you know, the story you were telling about that pitiable situation. Well, there's always an other side to the coin. I've got a story in the stack about an up and coming hopeful young preacher who murdered the hell out of his wife of 1 year. This comes out of Raleigh, North Carolina. Guy's name's Matthew James Phelps. I guess no relation to the Kansas Phelpses, but you never know. But late this past Friday night, he dialed 911 and said, "I have blood all over me, and there's a bloody knife on the bed, and I think I did it. I can't believe this. I had a weird dream where I was stabbing my wife, but I don't remember anything of it. I think it was because of the cold medicine I took."
The Ambien defense.
No, Ambien's a sleeping pill, but there's another one out there, and I can't remember. What is it? Teslon Pearls? I've seen those mentioned, but it's just bizarre. They were apparently, according to the news story, devoted to their Christian faith, and he was studying to become a pastor, and she was going to be a Sunday school teacher. Go figure.
Well, and those things are, as long as the guy keeps his story straight, they're almost impossible to prove them different, you know?
Yep. God is love, y'all.
The NGRI. You know, not guilty by reason of insanity or temporary insanity. That's the worst he's going to get is manslaughter.
He might get a plea deal, but, you know, he's a young white guy, so it's not like they're going to horizontally crucify him or anything.
No, he'd like that kid that did the rapey thing at Stanford, and, he got kicked off the swim team. That was his punishment, you know. And then he got his sentence suspended because he's already been punished enough. You know, to be dragged through the mud like this from a good family, you know?
Yeah, and David in South Carolina is telling me it was Corseden.
Corseden, yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, you know, that children's Cotylenol liquid formula makes me psychotic, so I guess I can testify that over-the-counter medications can be quite dangerous.
Well, I mean, but, you know, maybe if you're doing shooters or something, I mean, but, no, I'm kidding.
Jello shots for children, yes.
Yeah, I can't take any decongestant because it just screws with my blood pressure and makes me feel like there's an army of ants crawling over the top of my head. It feels like the individual hairs on my head, what few remain, are actually jumping from one follicle to another. It's terrible.
Results may vary.
Yeah, and then of course on the other side of it, to take something like, you know, just an antihistamine like a Benadryl or something.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just sensitive because, you know, I get sort of naughty just walking by it down in the cut rate drugstore. Oh, a little sleepy here. Oh, poppies. So, there you go. But it's not fashionable to say that we live in a brutal country.
Well, you know, there are more brutal. Honduras, Colombia has a higher homicide rate than we do.
Myanmar is having a bit of a problem right now.
Yeah, and I'm. It's interesting that they're painting a wide brush on Buddhism, saying, "Well, how can, you know, Buddhists be peace loving if they have Myanmar?" And it's like, no, that's a political wing. That's not Buddhism. You know, that's a political power struggle. And it is genocide. You know, those are all Muslims that they're working on.
And, you know, back here at home, you may be interested. Did you see the story about the anti-hate rally, anti-racist rally in Asbury Park yesterday?
No.
Asbury Park Press reporting that Allie Karolik, a 34-year-old transgender woman, tried to engage him in conversation. Of course, I don't understand that part. After a 22-year-old man named Morris May White, of course, showed up to counter-protest, get this, counter-protest a stand-against-hate rally. So you're having a stand-against-hate rally, and, of course, some little neo-Nazi pissant shows up to go, no, yay hate!
Hallelujah hate!
And so, according to the newspaper, he was saying, I hate liberals, I hate you people, you're trying to take away our rights. And Allie Karolik stepped in and said, that's enough. And, of course, he just pepper sprayed her.
Yeah, a friend of a friend got pepper sprayed in Seattle at one of their...
And New Jersey officials, even though he was standing there screaming out all the people he hated... New Jersey prosecutors have decided not to charge him with a hate crime.
No, of course not. He felt insecure.
And Morris May White said, well, I'm half Chinese and also an ethnic Jew, so I cannot be a white supremacist even if I wanted to be.
He's mud people. How's he going to stand with the KKK and the Nation when he's mud people?
Well, I don't know, except for the fact that he was standing there screaming, y'all are taking away my rights as a white person. Of course, it's New Jersey, so I've got the wrong accent. But
well, I think I tagged it. There was an article on another article at CBC about that they're having their ancestry checked now to make sure that they're, you know, blood and toil is just for, you know, the purity of the...
Yeah, the funny thing is it keeps coming back, and they've got undesirables in them, and there are long threads over on the white wing internet of why you're still okay even though your genetic test comes back and says that you're like 25% Jew, 33% black, you know. You know those companies are owned by Jews, you know. So they try to make everybody be a Jew.
Well, shadism, and if you can't, you know, if there's no melanin in your skin, then you can claim that you're, you know, of European ancestry until somebody gets a sample of your blood. I imagine probably pretty soon they're going to start selling, you know, somebody that's got pure blood, they'll be selling it to... people so they won't get exterminated. I don't know.
But see, it sets up a conundrum for people like me, Clarity, because one of these days I'm actually going to spring for one of these tests.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure I know how it's going to wind up. I mean, look in the mirror, you know, from my standpoint. And I'm going to have everything that a white supremacist could ever dream of. I'm going to be English and German, and Scots, and Scandinavian, maybe a little bit of Irish. And I'm going to be sitting there going, God damn it! Not even a little bit of indigenous, not a little bit of native, but please, just a little bit black. I mean, because it's, you know...
Blue-eyed soul.
And I can't carry a tune in a bucket, and you know it.
Oh, I'm just talking about how good your heart is, Bob. That's what I meant.
Well, I hope...
Bless your heart. Bless your heart, Bob.
But then again, you know what I could do? I mean, there's nothing better than taking money away from Nazis that they otherwise spend on, you know, hate. I could start swelling. I could start selling bona fide, guaranteed, ethnically pure white DNA swabs.
eBay's calling you, Bob. I don't know if it's legal, though, to sell blood over the internet. I'm not sure.
No. It's not even blood. It's just, you know, you stick it in your mouth and you put the thing in the bag and you send it away.
I was thinking of a blood glucose prick kind of thing, you know.
I have been accused of being one of those, but never mind. I'll be here all week.
Eat your yogurt, Bob.
Yeah, the yogurt is a good thing. Clarity, have yourself a wonderful evening. Be careful going outside.
I'm glad we got to share a little heavy and a little bit of light. And keep doing what you're doing because the world needs the work you're doing.
Well, as long as folks want it, you know, I'll be here. So, Clarity, have a good evening. And, God, it would be nice if the fires would all go out and you could just go out and breathe. But I have a feeling I'm going to see a few more of those hazy sunrises.
I think we got another couple weeks of it at least before the rains hit.
Yeah,
but we usually get good rain in September, so.
Well,
we'll see.
Hopefully sooner rather than later. Take care, Clarity. Bye now.
Peace.
My buddy Clarity from the Great Northwest. So if you want to engage in some conversation, you are more than welcome so to do. I told you there were other things going on besides North Korea and besides, and this is not to take anything away, but heroic tales of the rescues. And I'll leave that for the for-profit media because they've got the resources to parachute in and do that kind of thing. Leave it be. But from the Department of Attention Must Be Paid, the business of the Dreamers and DACA has a profound impact on on our society and our culture, because there are a lot of people in this country who were innocently brought to this country and committed no crime because they were legally incapable of it. One of those was a young man, and the verb tense is a giveaway, named Alonso Guillen. He was from Lufkin, Texas, 31 years old, and he and some of his friends went out trying to rescue people in the midst of the flooding. Well, their boat hit a bridge, and Alonso Guillen and two others were thrown into the raging waters and swept away. Finally, on Sunday afternoon, his family saw his body float by. The Houston Chronicle story says the recovery of his body brings the number of people who have died or feared dead from Harvey to nearly 60, and officials warn that more could be found. He was born in Piedras Negras, Mexico, came to Lufkin as a teenager, and didn't think twice when it came time to try to go out and do right by people. And he had been given resident status or was, you know, protected against deportation under DACA. And imagine the hell on earth this is. His father is in the United States, in Texas, legally. His mother is stuck in Piedras Negras, trying to apply to be able to come to the United States. File this under greatest country in the history of the world on earth in the universe today forever. Alonso Guillen's mama begged the United States to please let her come across long enough to put her hands upon her son's body to see him one last time. And this country said no. They turned her back at the border and forbade her from participating in burying her son, who died in hopes of saving American citizens. And so now Donald Trump is going to say that, well, you know, that Obama executive order's got to go. Jesus. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. How hateful can we be? Don't ask, because then you get stories like this one. Smiling young man in a broad-brimmed cowboy hat. Killed trying to rescue people. And we as a country do not have the common decency to allow his mama to come to his own funeral. Her own son's funeral. Yeah, I know the religious people like to say, well, you know, Harvey hit because of the homosexuals and the liberals, and what about the fetuses? If you're going to play those metaphysical games, aren't there a few other questions you could ask? About karmic blowback for treating human beings like shit. Yeah, somebody cue up Lee Greenwood. Let's go talk to the angry Indian. Hey, angry. You there? Angry, it warned me that you were using what it described as an out-of-date version of Skype. And that I might not be able to hear you. And that appears to be the case. Well, this is weird. Angry, maybe try again, okay, buddy? I'm going to hang up and see what happens. Bizarre. No telling. I don't know if Angry's going to try back again or not. All right, let's try. Let's try it in reverse. Angry, do I have you? I got a lot of noise. No? Extremely faintly, my friend. Yeah, you're a million. I can hear you, but you're a million miles away. I don't know. Don't know what to tell you. Can you hear me at all, Angry? I wish I understood why this works this way. Just a sec. Okay, so that didn't work out as planned. Yeah, note coming in from David in South Carolina. Public transportation is something else that is pathetic in the USA South. Yes, it is. Every time one of these disasters hits, I think of this as some people ask, why didn't they evacuate? They never heard of no transportation, no money, no way out. This issue never even makes it into discussions about the disaster. No, it doesn't, and conveniently, because it also keeps people from having to answer those questions. You know, those conservative values types in the South. If you know the history of Atlanta, the struggle just to put the Metro Atlanta Rapid Transit Authority trains in. Oh no. That was ferociously resisted and successfully by at least one county. On, of course, racist grounds. But now, in the aftermath of Harvey, people lost their cars. It means they lost their means of getting to work and making a livelihood. Because, you know, freedom. All right, let's check in with Scott out in San Diego. Hey, Scott. Hey, Punky.
Hey, yeah, okay. I couldn't remember whether I had the mic muted or not.
Okay, so I have to ask you a question. I got another question over the weekend. This is becoming a thing. Has Scott seen The Big Lebowski yet?
Oh, Bob. I'm not sure how to answer this. I'm not trying to be
an asshole about it. It's just it's turned into a trope in the community.
All right, I'll tell you exactly what I'll do. I've intended to watch it, God, at least three times in the last week and a half. But something always pops up that sidetracks me. I will do this. I will make this commitment. My word must be my bond. And normally it is. This business about keeping an life and aliveness break down at two distinct points, at the point of our expectations and when we don't keep our agreements. So I will keep this agreement. I will watch The Big Lebowski in the next 48 hours to be absolutely sure about it. I want to give myself plenty of room, and I'll report back after I've seen it within the next 48 hours.
Now, I mean, there are caveats here. If somebody knocks on your door and says, there's a wildfire 100 yards, and you're allowed to leave.
No, I know. And there's no wildfires, anywhere near me. I mean, we have them in California, but thank God not near me. Now, what we did have that damn near sapped every ounce of strength that I have had was, up until yesterday, we had running about 5 days straight, maybe close to 6 days straight, plus 90 degree weather. And even at night, like 10, 11, midnight, it was still running in the mid 70s, which in this new dwelling, okay, that I'm in, new to me, was built in like 1941. So insulation was not even thought of when they put this place up. They built it to last, which it has very well. Hell, some of the fixtures and things in the kitchen are original. The tile countertop, and I'll have to send you a picture of the kitchen sink, one of those, ceramic-covered cast iron sinks, sink.
Yes.
With the lovely, fixtures of that era. And it's just, it's tremendous. I love it. But in terms of retaining warmth or heat or coolness, go somewhere else, because you're not going to find it here. And then about 10 days ago, my little Honeywell 3-speed rotary fan that I got from Target, my fan on the stand, that poor thing gave up the ghost like 8 or 10 days ago. And if it hadn't been for this swamp cooler, which my landlord's friend who moved back east donated to me, along with a love seat and a dining room table and chairs and a recliner, leather recliner, I probably wouldn't be talking to you. I'd probably be hospitalized somewhere for heat issues. But I tell you, that swamp cooler, even on the low setting of just the fan, that thing, you could test aircraft, prototypes in that thing, like a wind tunnel effect. But that is literally the only thing that kept me. I mean, sitting here with the swamp cooler blowing at full tilt boogie, like 2.5-3 feet away from me, I still didn't do much more than just sit here and was still miserable. Because I think I told you this. I can't remember. In December of 89, they removed a walnut-sized tumor from my pituitary gland, okay? And it was benign, but the process of removing it screwed up something that I didn't know I had, called a hypothalamus.
Yes, we have those.
It's a critical thing, and among the many things that it controls is your body's thermostat.
Yeah, your temperature regulation.
So that when most people... Oh, yes, yes. So when most people are like slightly uncomfortably warm, I feel like I'm bubbling under my skin, okay? And then when most people are just a little bit chilly, it's as if I'm ready to hibernate like some bear off in a cave somewhere. And it was really awful when I still lived in the Midwest in the winter. It was just brutal. I would literally hibernate in the cold weather, because I could not get warm enough. And I didn't exactly shut down, but I got as close to shutting down as you can get without, actually going into bear-like hibernation. But anyway, I take your point about wildfires and things like that. I will keep safety first in mind, but I will watch that damn movie in the next 48 hours. I'm even writing it down. I'll put it on a little post-it note and stick it on the end of my nose. So if I don't see it, Punky can say, you got something on your nose. So anyway, but I'm telling you, Tracy was right. I don't know what, I've never been to LA, and it's probably even warmer up there being so built up and everything. But I'm telling you, normally I can dance with it, but I met my match with this recent spate of hot weather and humid too, which is always enjoyable. But earlier you were talking about what Trump might do, and the business of dealing with North Korea and the recent announcement of the buildup in Afghanistan. I always get a little melancholy this time of year because we're a week away from that sad, sad anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah, you mean the sad, sad anniversary that was entirely preventable? Yes.
Oh, yes, definitely. Most assuredly preventable, come to find out. But a friend of mine was on the plane that hit the Pentagon. He was, I guess, 58 or so, 56 or 58. I had worked with him in D.C. in the 70s.
So I'm guessing the 9/11 truthers kind of piss you off, right?
Well, it isn't that they piss me off. I always try to listen to everybody. But none of them has successfully answered my simple query. If a plane didn't actually hit the Pentagon, where is my friend and where are the dozen or half a dozen fifth graders he was accompanying on a nature field trip to Santa Barbara? Where have they been, lo, these many years? And nobody can get even remotely close to answering that.
Well, see, before you ever tuned in, back when I used to do a shit ton of interviews, we accidentally had a truther on one night.
Mm.
I mean, really, it was accidental.
It was on this show, though.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he explained that all the people who were supposed to be on the aircraft that hit the Pentagon were actually put on buses and taken away.
Buses, you say?
Yes.
Now, where did the... You know how when you get on the city bus, yeah, up on the front of it, at the top, there's a sign that says where the bus is headed?
Yeah.
Did these buses have signs like that saying where they were, what the destination was?
Yeah, going to meet Jim Morrison and Elvis.
Oh, I see. Now, I would have thought, dealing with a truther, that they would be taken to a big field where the black helicopters would land, and then they'd be carried off by black helicopter to one of those FEMA camps down in, what, Arkansas?
Yeah, or somewhere? Or Texas, you know.
Or Texas, yeah, a lot of wide open
one of those abandoned Walmarts.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was getting at. What was that, Operation Crystal or Emerald or... No, I think they were doing crystal.
Jade Helm.
I knew it was a semi-precious stone. I think they were doing crystal, which is why they come up with some of these notions, these FEMA camp and black helicopter folks. And I'm sure enough of a conspiracy buff. I would consider myself a fairly decent authority on the minutiae of the JFK assassination case.
Yeah, we've gone into some of it, yes.
So it's not that I am against the idea of alternate realities or theories. See, they say that I didn't even want to get started on this, but I'm in a way glad I did, okay? All right, they say that the night before or something, demolition experts put all manner of ordnance inside the towers, the twin towers in New York City, which is what caused them to just plummet within 12 seconds to ground level. All right. Has anybody given any thought to the notion of gravity? And not just mere gravity, but in the manufacturing...
Oh, Scott, wait, time out. No. Time out,
okay.
Please.
Okay, all right.
Please don't. I mean, I shouldn't have... please don't open that tiny little crack in the 9/11 proof door any wider than I opened it, because there's a small set of topics that drive progressive communities absolutely past their ability to engage in rational discourse.
All right. Well,
one of them's 9/11. The other one is Israel Palestine.
Yeah, that's true.
And in more modern times, whether or not Hillary is the devil herself, or just the devil's chief demon.
Minion.
Demon.
Yeah. All right. Well, at your request, I'll drop it, but I will ask you a question.
Oh, no.
Which will touch upon the point I would have made, okay? Have you ever burned a log, an actual log, not a presto log, but an actual, honest-to-God, cut-down-from-a-tree, well-seasoned log in a fireplace?
Many.
All right. There's something that happens when that thing is really going ablaze, full-tilt boogie. There's light that comes from it. There's also heat that comes from it.
Yes.
In other words, a log in a pile next to the house, not in the fireplace, but next to the house, is a 3D manifestation, a physical entity, which is representative, or it has stored up in it something that can benefit you later on when you put it to use.
Potential energy.
Yeah. All right, when you think of, and I'm going to touch on it just ever so gingerly.
I'm still going to get emails, Scott.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll take pity on you, and I'll drop that. But it is a bittersweet time for me because, especially with the Trump plan to build up troops in Afghanistan. And we should know, if we know anything, that throughout the long span of history, Afghanistan has always represented a sucker's bet to anybody foolhardy enough to think that they go all the way
back to the goddamn Medes, okay? Yes.
Oh, Jesus, yes, yes.
you're absolutely right. And if anything about Afghanistan, and it does drive me crazy, the rationale on the right, and the military rationale in particular, that, well, you know, if we don't send more troops to get slaughtered over there, that means all the troops that have been slaughtered over there got slaughtered in vain. So we've got to have more slaughter. And in a way, because, you know, I'm anti-war. I really am. The question I asked at the beginning of the program, is there still an anti-war movement? Because if there is, it might be handy to sort of, you know, crank it up and take it around the block a couple of times about now. Arises, you know, from my profound preference for not getting in wars we don't have to get in. But let me just finish where Afghanistan is concerned, Scott. I could almost respect them if they would just tell the damn truth. Okay, just come out and say, listen, we're going to be in Afghanistan forever because Afghanistan's got resources under it. And we don't want the Chinese to get them, and so we're just gonna camp out there, and you know, less than 1% of the country has any involvement that even remotely touches the military. Anyway, less than 1% of the population. So you know, suck it up, Buttercup. But you know, we're an empire. We're doing what empires do. Okay. And I'd say, well, you know, I disagree, and I think we should march until you wise up and bring everybody home. But at least you're being honest about it, because this bullshit of we've got to. Did you notice the rationale has changed? It used to be, you know, we're going to defeat the Taliban, and now it's, well, you know, we kind of need a beachhead in Afghanistan because we got to keep an eye on those Pakistanis because they've got the bomb.
They will always change the rationale and the goalpost, and. Believe me, there is a good bit of truth to what you're saying as far as whatever resources that godforsaken region might have to offer, Okay. But it's also because we have not learned from the long, long history of Afghanistan. That's where the American exceptionalism notion comes into play. Like, we're God's special creature, and it'll be different for us because of our vast exceptionalism. I'm sure some of that, the hubris is what they call that. I'm sure there was a lot of that going on as well, in addition to the foothold to safeguard the resources for our use, because we can only, being the good guys on the block, we will always put them to the best possible commercial use, you know, for the benefit of some. Okay? So, yeah, you're right. I mean, if they had been straight up, but see, America is not interested in truth-telling or being straight up about anything, which leads me to what I was going to ask you about. You know who Mark Maron is, who used to be on Air America?
Oh, yeah, in the morning? And he's got one of the most popular podcasts in the country, in the world.
Do you listen to WTF, What the Fuck podcast, starring Mark Maron and guests?
I've heard it from time to time. I'm not a regular because, frankly, I don't have a lot of time to listen to just about anybody.
Well, I happened to be browsing YouTube the other day looking for something else, and this is always happening to me. I'm looking for something else, and I end up finding, I don't find the thing I was looking for, but I find something that's even better. And I forget now what I was looking for, but I ended up listening to a podcast with Mark Maron from a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I guess, by now. And the guest was the late Gary Shandling, the comedian, who I used to didn't like, okay? I enjoyed him for what he was doing, but he wore on me rather quickly, and I'd have to tune him out. But I never knew this about him. He is almost a guru-type wise fellow, or was. And he was, if you ever get a chance to listen to Mark Maron talking with the late Gary Shandling, he was talking about how foolish America is, not just the people, but the people in charge, in that we set up for ourselves expectations on a national and international basis that we are nowhere even remotely close to realizing in our own homes and in our own lives. And the example that he gave, and this was before Trump, okay, became our current figurehead, okay, but he was talking about national security, and I guess he was meaning it in the sense of military and engagement in all these far-flung corners of the globe. But it applies also to the wall, the great Mexican border wall, okay? And he said, we come up with words to this effect. We come up with these grandiose plans, how we're going to make ourselves safe and everything's going to be calm and wonderful. And we can't, because we don't grasp that life is not like that. Shit happens in life. We get brain tumors. There are break-ins where people have their entire families slaughtered, you know, by renegades who just happened to pick that house on that day when those people were in there, and it was one hellacious bloody mess. And he said, on a national and international basis, we set ourselves up for failure every time simply because wishing don't make it so. But, and I'm not even doing justice to what he was getting across on the program. It was like brilliant in his insightfulness and how he just nailed the dynamic that most people don't even realize there is a dynamic. They would much rather beat the drum and, you know, wear their Make America Great hat and live under the illusion, because they're sure as hell not interested in truth or reality. But catch that podcast next time you're out driving around and you've got about a 1-hour drive somewhere. because it will edify you. And I don't know your take on Shandling. I mean, if he did nothing else but Gary, the what was that show he had where he was a talk show host? Larry Sanders show. If he was known just for that, he would be aces with me, looking back on it. But after hearing him on with Marin that time, that guy.
Oh, look, comedians are generally, as a rule of thumb, they're sad people, and they're also brilliant people, because it takes brilliance to peel back the layers of the ordinary and expose the absurd.
Yeah.
Nothing on a level as profound as that, but I think I mentioned last week that Agnes and I went through about three nights of watching Craig Ferguson stand up. Mm-hmm. And one of them hurt us. I don't mean emotionally, you know, made us sad. We were laughing so hard, we woke up sore the next morning.
Oh, wow. See, that's the best kind of laughter.
And
that's
his
laughter.
His ability to weave in a running gag was nothing short of brilliant. In this case, it was two, 3, 4 years old. He wove in a running gag. See? About Kenny G. And it was devastating. The physical presentation, and I'm not going to ruin it for anybody.
Where did you see it? Was it like on Amazon or Netflix or?
One of them.
Okay.
But it's not a reason not to watch The Big Lebowski, Scott. Now,
well,
just
I
stop
knew you
it.
Were going to say that because I damn near said it myself. I'm thinking long
see,
term.
See, like I said, it's turned into a damn thing. I've got 6 emails here from people sending you links to go watch it.
Yeah, it's turned
but,
into
but
an
you've got,
epic poem.
You've got HBO on demand, and it's just right there.
Yeah, well, I found that out. I thought I would have to wait until it was on HBO just regular. And then I said, well, dummy, you've got HBO Go. And lo and behold, there it was. And I've even added it to my viewing list. So that should count for something. But 48 hours from now, I will. Now, as far as what Ferguson was doing in terms of making you and Agnes laugh, did either of you at any point either like beg the image on the TV to stop because you couldn't breathe or you were going to pee?
Yes, absolutely.
Well,
and then
that's funny.
And she looked at me and said, pause it. For God's sakes, pause it.
Yeah.
Finally, because we realized we did have that much control over the situation.
Yeah. Well, see, now that's the benchmark, the hallmark, the benchmark of funny. When someone literally begs you to stop because they can't breathe or they're going to just let loose with pee all over the place.
Yeah. No, it was like that. Hey, of course, I have a weird sense of humor, so other people might watch it and go, I don't know why he thought that was funny.
Well, I've got one more thing, and then you, if you want to open it up for another caller. And this came to mind when you were talking about Houston, just sort of a twisted bright spot in the proceedings. And I think I sent it to you. It was like a question for Jim Baker. Can my empty pudding bucket be used as a flotation device asking for a friend in Houston? So, geez. God.
We do our prayer meeting Wednesday thing every week, and I make no end of sport over the excesses and the hatefulness of the religion industry. But this, no, I really did. I mean, you remember the original It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, right?
Oh, yes. Probably in my top three favorite movies.
And the exchange,
and I saw it in the theater.
And the exchange between Buddy Hackett and Ethel Merman.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like everybody. I want everybody to be happy.
But not you, lady. I hope you drop dead.
Yeah.
Well, that's it's when I saw the Joel Osteen story today and realized, you know, it's Monday and it's Labor Day anyway. So this is. And yeah, I guess you'd save it for. But no, because there is something so. And again, I'm not one to throw around these absolutes, but there is something so undeniably evil about a man worth millions who has multiple mansions based on a tax-free Dodge, saying to people who have lost every goddamn thing that they need to thank God for it. I mean, really? You're that out of touch, are you, buddy?
Well, the
and God's going to pay you back?
But I'll tell you what he's doing, having had some experience with this prosperity gospel mindset, okay? There is a brand of Christianity, which I'm pretty sure he says he goes along with, and you see it with Jim Baker back when he had his PTL club, and with Jan and Paul Crouch at TBN up here in Costa Mesa. Their little spiel is not only do they do the prosperity gospel, but they, using a couple of far-flung verses of scripture, will make the rubes think that evil cannot come from God. Evil can only come from the enemy of God, who would be the devil or Satan. So that when this stuff happens, it's simply because God's in charge in heaven, but for a temporary time, the devil, the enemy, has been given charge of the events here on earth. Because after all, Bob, we're all born fallen, sinful creatures without having to lift a finger or say a word.
Yeah, that's another one that drives me crazy.
You know, so it's like, you know, if there's good that has occurred, like real tangible good, well, only God can bring that about, because God is love. God is good, okay? And we thank him for our food. But if it's evil and nastiness and damage and suffering, well, that's as a result of the devil being in charge of this earthly realm. Certainly you know that.
Oh, I've heard that all along.
But I'm waiting to hear. Well, no, I'm not really waiting to hear, but I'm sure that Jim Baker will chime in with other nonsense. And I'm really, really sad. I mean, truly, genuinely sad that he has fallen into the trap of easy money from the poor, gullible people. You remember he went to prison and he was supposed to be in there for like 45 years?
Yeah, almost five.
Yeah, for that timeshare. And a book came out of it. And the name of the book that he wrote, and he may have had an assistant or ghostwriter, but it was definitely as told by him, okay, to the assistant. But the title of the book was I Was Wrong. And I got that book from the library. This is a post-prison book, okay? And I read that book, and I almost, well, no, I actually did say that, well, here is a man who truly has seen the error of his ways. And now just, yeah. See, I was at
one time. Can I interest you in some bucket pudding?
Well, I was at one time, believe it or not, before I got my head together, a somewhat easy mark for these people long ago when I was a Jesus freak back in my Bob.
Because look, if it's true, it's a pretty tantalizing, seductive idea. I mean, look at Joel Osteen. I mean, Jesus Christ, he got a lot of people to give money to him, and now he's rich. I mean, because God loves him. So the prosperity gospel must be true. So if you just give more money to Joel Osteen, somebody will give money to you. It works a lot better as Christianity than it does as Amway. And look, Amway ain't going broke.
Yeah. That's. But the thing about it is, it doesn't seem to. What do they call that in those pyramid schemes? Your downline.
I don't know, and I've never having participated in one. I got pitched on Amway once and ran like hell.
Well, the folks at the very top are the only ones making any serious coin. The rest of them have got a garage or a spare room
full of shit.
Cleaning products or vitamins or supplements or whatever, and are poorer for the experience.
That's right. And remember, friends, tonight's program is brought to you by Tremendous Turnips. Tremendous Turnips in capsule form. All your turnip needs in one simple pill. Tremendous Turnips. So people won't say, you just fell off the turnip truck. Say, no, I've got a whole bottle. Tremendous Turnips, only from the Horn. You were saying?
No, I think that's a grand idea. Make it available in capsule form and powder, which you just add to any liquid, well, virtually any liquid, and get the all the nutritional.
Your first month's supply, only $29.95. Order now, and we'll send you a two-month supply, and we won't bill you again until 2 months later. Feeling a little left out, a little bit let down? The Tremendous Turnips may not be doing it for you. You might want to add a supplement of brutal Brussels sprouts. Brutal Brussels sprouts capsules have been known to cure that mysterious disease in which the nose simply slides off the face. Missing a nose, you probably aren't taking brutal Brussels sprouts.
Gee, see, and the thing is, there's a fortune to be made, but you're too decent a person to do it because you know that you know better. Not only...
Well, I just assume people are as intelligent as I am.
Well...
Who in their right fucking mind would order something called Super Beets? Honest to Jesus.
Well,
go get a can of goddamn beets.
Yeah. Yeah, get them in as natural a form as you can get them and use them that way, you know, and pocket the balance.
Now from the Paleo Nutrition Network, it's Bowl of Borscht. Jesus.
Years ago, I actually lost some serious weight on Herbalife. I mean, I did. I dropped massive tonnage and looked and felt better and didn't change a lot in the way of my daily routine, although I did clean up the diet quite a lot. But as far as exercise or any of that, I don't know what's in that stuff, but at least back then in the 80s, it actually did work. Now, I don't know if they have discovered, you know, ill effects that can sometimes happen with whatever's in it. But it back then, I lost some serious
See,
damage.
I've been skeptical ever since 11th grade chemistry when my wonderful, wonderful chemistry teacher told us all about the miracle diet pill that had gone around in like the 40s or 50s. I don't know when it was. I trusted every word that came out of her mouth to be the gospel truth because I never caught her lying to me. And apparently some enterprising capitalist at one time put little dehydrated tapeworms in capsules and called them a diet pill.
Oh, man.
And that's so, even, you know...
That's even better than Dr. Brinkley's, what was it, monkey balls or goat nuts or...
New, exclusively from the Horn, Charismatic Kumquats. That's right. Charismatic Kumquats provide all your kumquat nutrition in a simple pill that you take once a day.
Jeez.
I'm sorry. I've got no patience for that bullshit. And if that's... And you know, I, from time to time, I take some grief because we run this program on listener contributions, okay?
Yeah.
But I would rather do it that way than fucking lie to people. Okay, nobody, you know. Oh well, you know, if you buy my righteous rutabagas, you're gonna have a spring in your step. Your post nasal drip will dry up. Yeah, oh fuck off, please.
Well, you know, the only person that ever sold me anything in terms of consumer products that I never had an issue with any of them was Paul Harvey, And I know politically he's was a little iffy.
Yes, the man, the man that Bart Kopp once referred to repeatedly as the old horse molester.
No, wait a minute. I don't know about that. What? How? What?
Well, Paul, day in and day out in the 90s, Paul Harvey went on and on about what a filthy sexual deviant scumbag Bill Clinton was. And Bart Kopp's position was, none of this is fucking true. So I guess we can say all kinds of things, like we can refer to Paul Harvey as an old horse molester.
Okay.
And guess what? Paul Harvey never sued Bart Kopp, but then again, you know.
Well, I know that you always make fun of Bose Radio, but he sold me one of the big ones, you know, those $1,200 jobs back in the early 90s. That was a hell of a piece of equipment, and I sure liked it.
Oh, yeah, sure it was. You know? I mean, I've heard them. It can sit on the shelf, and it sounds like it's all over the room. It's fascinating technology. But it's the idea that, well... It's the overarching idea of commercialism. I talked about it a little bit with Clarity earlier. This idea that you have to be pitched on yearning for things in order. Advertising is just in traditional over the air radio advertising, and you know, TV of course. You and I have talked about some of our favorite ads. But it is why the broadcast exists. The content is just filler that provides.
It's to put on between the ads. That's all the content is.
Right.
Always has been.
Yeah.
There's one, you talk about favorite ads, and it shows up every night when I'm watching 77 Sunset Strip on, I guess, MeTV. It's for the Colonial Penn Life Insurance, the one that Alex Trebek?
Yes.
The scene opens with an older black gentleman standing at his dresser, his bureau, and he's got a big jar, like a mason jar, full of loose change. And he throws a couple of quarters or dimes or whatever into it, and he says, "It's something I've done ever since I was a kid. Every night, ever since I was a kid." And my mind always goes to whacking off. But it turns out that's not what he does. He puts the change from breaking a dollar every night into his little jar. And little did he know that for just $9 a unit, he could get affordable life insurance from Colonial Penn. And then his wife joins in to sing the hosannas to the... insurance company, and then
my favorites now are the ones where the aging boomers are talking about, you know, we got our life insurance when the kids were young, just in case something awful would happen, but we've been paying on it all these years, so what we're going to do now is we're going to sell it for pennies on the dollar, and we're probably going to take a weekend vacation and go to McDonald's. You too can do this. You can sell your old life insurance. Why don't you do that? Fuck your kids. What are they going to need it? You paid on it all these years, and we're not even going to get to enjoy it? Fuck those little ingrates.
Well, it's an example of the short-sightedness of people in this country. They're reality and truth avoidant. Because... yeah, you might cash in the policy, sell the proceeds for immediate financial gain, but you're still going to die, you know?
Yeah, right.
Well, another one I like is the little gizmo that you can get for $19.95 plus shipping and handling to put on your socks for you. Have you seen that?
I did. I saw that for the first time, and in fact... Agnes saw that and said, "No fucking way."
Yeah, way. The sock slider, I think, is the name of it.
And I'm not gonna make sport of anybody who needs one of those things.
No,
because
I'm not either.
We thought about it for a minute, and went, okay, you know, somebody came up with an invention that met a need. Okay, that's whatever.
But for most of us, I mean, unless you're pretty wore out, okay, and beat up in life physically. the old tried and true method that I learned as a young child, when my mother got tired of tying my shoes for me and said, I'll show you how to do it as many times as you want me to, then I'm going to untie them. And if you haven't picked it up and figured it out, you don't go out until you've learned to tie your own damn shoes. It's this thing called, oh, I don't know, bending over, okay? But again, I don't make fun either, except when absolutely necessary, you know. I ever get to the point where I need one of these 1995 gizmos to put on my goddamn socks, just pull out the pistol and shoot me.
Well, I got another one.
Okay.
I figured this one out a long time ago too, because I was raised in the South. I stopped wearing socks.
Well, there you go. That would fix it.
I mean, from high school onward, a pair of Sperry topsiders or, you know, Timberland. I get about 5-6 years out of a pair until the stitching rots and the rubber sole just begins to go floppita, 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 and then they have to be replaced, because eventually you will take a step, the rubber sole will fold under, and you will fall on your face. I'm almost there now with the current pair,
but in the early stages of the rubber sole changing its configuration, if there's loose change on the ground, you can unobtrusively scoop it up.
Oh my God, yes, even that was a nice tie in there. That really was. That was quality.
Thank you very much.
But I've actually shaken dimes out of the. It has happened. I was just thinking, I get it. But as far as but my God, the never. Ending ceaseless hustles. I at least appreciate the ones where they put a little creativity into it so that you get a little mini movie, like the one, what is it? Is it for DirecTV or what? Where, what's his name? Mark Wahlberg is standing there in his tux and he's replaced in the mirror by Patrick Stewart, who says,
yeah,
he's replaced by a man who's more polished, more educated, more British. And walks away. And so, yeah, okay, because I like Patrick Stewart. Cool.
Well, there was a spot several years ago that I used to make unceasing fun of until my cousin's wife, his widow, informed me that I shouldn't do that. And I can't remember the name of the spot, but this is 3 or 4 years ago. Don't let Punky hear this. It was a fake plastic parakeet, battery operated.
To go with your fake plastic fish on a wall, right?
No, this was a little thing to keep Grandma or Auntie comfortable and give her a little companionship in her twilight years without all the mess and bother of having an actual parakeet.
Well, you know, we had a...
But I made great fun until Cheryl, my cousin's widow, reminded me that Aunt Josephine, my paternal grandmother's sister, who lived out in Manassas, Virginia, had a parakeet that lived until he was 7 or 8 or 9 years old and then died. And the arrangement was, and they even wrote her up in the Post, the Washington Post, because it was such an interesting story. The arrangement was that if Pete, I think his name was Petey, the parakeet died, they would preserve him as best they could in the family freezer until such time as Aunt Josephine died, and then they would be buried together. Now, I don't know what the deal was going to be with Petey if Aunt Josephine had died first. I don't know if he made similar arrangements or what. But when Petey died, they were going to get Aunt Josephine one of these mechanical battery-operated parakeets, you know, to somehow replace and bring a little solace for the absence and departure of little Petey the parakeet. I'll send you that article from the Post. I come by it honestly. I am crazy-ass people.
I absolutely believe you. I do. It's almost like one of those... I don't know. The parakeet goes before Aunt Josephine, and you know it's like one of those ancient Chinese tombs from the from the Gong Dynasty, where you know, there's a small army of terracotta Aunt Josephines around the casket of the little parakeet. Who knows?
Well, you got to remember, Bob, these are simple country folk down in Hoadley and Manassas, down there, you know. And they're just simple country folk. They don't know. But
it's just simple country people, and if you're not careful, city slicker, we'll separate you from everything but your ears.
Well, they actually were pretty slick people themselves.
That's
they could
what
see
I mean.
Them coming.
Yeah.
You know?
God, no, I
little did I know that I would bring up Petey the parakeet, and I think they kept him in a coffee can, packed in dry ice.
Of course
in
they
a coffee
did.
Can. In the depth of Aunt Josephine and Uncle Mike's big old freezer down in the cellar, where the hell ever they kept
it. Down there where Boo Radley lived, right?
Yeah, down there in the root cellar. Oh, Jesus. My family tree, if you shake it even a little, you're going to find quite a collection of a motley assortment of people, colorful people. I don't
well,
dare
you know,
get
between,
my...
Between your...
I don't dare get my genealogy blood work or saliva test done. I don't want to know.
Yeah, but between...
Because what
but,
I already
no,
know
between
is
your between your extended family and Edwards in Dallas,
mm-hmm.
There's at least a 4 or 5 year miniseries.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Somebody get AMC on the phone, because this is the next big thing. This is going to make Breaking Bad and Mad Men seem like nothing.
Exactly. Or Green Acres, or you know, something. Beverly All right. Hillbillies. I will bid you and Punky a fond adieu for the evening. It's been a delightful conversation, Scott, I must say, because we managed to not talk about much of anything, and yet at the same time, everything.
Well... That it takes a special breed to do it, and the two of us, we ace it every time.
Scott, you and Punky have a good evening, and look, I just please get it done, just get it done.
I wrote it down, and
it's not like it's going to hurt. It's not an English living room drama or anything. You're liable to actually laugh out loud quite a bit.
Wait, let me stand up. Punky, turn around here and tell me what you see on my nose. Do you see a post-it note on my nose?
Uh-huh.
He's looking at it, and he can't quite figure it out. He says, something's amiss here. Oh, well.
All right. We'll trust you on this, but you got 48 hours tops.
Okay. I will post a photo on my Facebook showing the post-it note on my nose for all the skeptics, for all the truthers out there. the post-it note on the nose truther brigade. How's that?
Okay, yeah. It'll be the what do we call them? The Lebowski truthers.
There you go.
Yeah.
You got it.
All right, Scott. You take care. Have a good night, man.
I'll see you, Bob.
Bye now. Scott and Punky calling from San Diego. This is harder missionary work than the church trying to convert the fucking Vikings. 12 minutes before the hour, we've almost wiped out this Labor Day edition of the Horn. Big thanks going out. I didn't say a blessed word about fundraising this evening, and Charlene still kicked in. And thank you very kindly, Charlene. Thank you for that. If I could never mention it again, and people would just do the 200, you know, 10 at 20, 20 at 10 thing, would that be awesome? And of course, that's part of what the Patreon campaign is about. Ultimately getting enough people kicking in so that we just do the program. And it's uninterrupted by ads or fundraising mentions or anything like that. It's just the program. And I'm sorry, but that seems, that's really fascinating to me. Exciting, even. So thank you, Charlene. Thank you. 11 before the hour, the Miami Herald has reported that the National Hurricane Center is saying that Irma is heading for 140-mile-an-hour winds as it goes through the Caribbean. And Rick Scott, who, of course, hates the federal government until he needs a big money check, has already declared a state of emergency for every county in Florida. Our friend Beth down in Dallas posted a picture or posted an article that showed graphically what Harvey would look like in a number of other locations. One of them was Florida, in which the entire, I'd say two-thirds of the entirety of Florida minus the panhandle were covered up. That's how big Harvey was. Another comparison showed the entirety of South Carolina, part of Florida, and part of North Carolina covered up. Another comparison showed everything from Virginia Beach to freaking Connecticut covered up, and, you know, all the way inland to Washington, D.C. So, I mean, that's, and who knows? Irma could be that. Some of the nastiest hurricanes in recent memory have been the ones that ginned up out off Cabo Verde and had plenty of time to swirl and stew and gather energy, and then whack. Rick Scott in Florida said, "Today, given these forecasts and the intensity of this storm, I've declared a state of emergency for every county in Florida to make certain the state's federal and local governments are able to work together and make sure resources are dispersed to local communities as we get prepared for this storm. In Florida, we always prepare for the worst and hope for the best. And while the exact path of Irma is not absolutely known at this time, we cannot afford to not be prepared. This state of emergency allows our emergency management officials to act swiftly in the best interest of Floridians without the burden of bureaucracy or red tape." You're going to want some of that bureaucracy later, aren't you, Rick? I'm guessing you are. But speaking of bureaucracy, one last little note on the way out the door. This week, the Congress will begin debating Harvey aid. And I'm a mean son of a gun, so, you know, I've suggested that that Harvey aid be made contingent upon Texans promising never to reelect any of the sons of bitches who voted against Sandy aid forever and ever, amen. Because I'm mean that way. But that won't happen. The Democrats and the liberals and the progressives will simply do the right thing without arguing over you know, just how shitty the Texas delegation was back when people in New Jersey and Connecticut and New York badly needed relief. All the way down to Washington, D.C. There was damage to the Smithsonian. That was pork. But did you know, because I didn't until today, with all this talk of what's the federal government going to do, did you know that the state of Texas has a rainy day fund? Now, there's a certain amount of the workings of the goddess of irony involved in having a rainy day fund, because if Harvey didn't qualify as a rainy damn day, a rainy week, then I can't imagine what does, unless it's maybe tax cuts for some oil billionaires or something like that. That's what the real rainy day is. Or, you know, the oil business dries up, so we've got to make sure that, you know, oil executives don't have to go and pawn their Rolexes and sell their Porsches. But Texas doesn't just have a rainy day fund. Texas has a rainy day fund valued at around $10 billion with a B, dollars.
there are a lot of stories out there of people who got bypassed in terms of early attempts at relief for Harvey. Tivoli, Texas, being one of them, where Texas did manage to get a sanitarian out there to complain to people who were voluntarily providing hot food from their barbecues for people who hadn't had any hot food in a while. The state of Texas did manage to get a sanitarian out there to tell them that that they were going, you know, that they were in violation of the law. Because, you know, well, where's your meat thermometer? Now, we're talking about people who treat the idea of cooking food over burning coals with something approaching religious fervor. But, no, they did manage to get somebody out there to bitch at him about food handling, but couldn't actually get food to them. But Texas is sitting on a $10 billion rainy day fund. But all you hear Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, talking about is how much money the federal government's going to give, and whatever they give, it's not going to be enough, and we're going to need 10 times as much. And absolutely thus far has refused to call a special session of the Texas legislature to open up that rainy day fund and actually start taking care of people who desperately need it. I know. Not being mean. But these are the people that are all the time hollering about states' rights and state sovereignty. I mean, there are a hell of a lot of people who need medical attention in Texas right now who can't go because, well, they didn't take the Medicaid expansion, and so they don't have health insurance. And there's no Harvey exception for health insurance. But Greg Abbott, call a special session of the legislature to take care of Texans with Texas's own money? Oh, hell no! Not yet, at least. I mean, why spend Texas's money when you can take Yankee dollars instead? See how it works? Because that whole personal responsibility thing only applies if the hurricane hits New York or New Jersey or Connecticut or Massachusetts or something like that. They need to hang on to that rainy day fund. You know, for a rainy day. So that's the program for this Labor Day. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed being here to help create it. Thanks, Darcy. Thanks for jumping in there. That's much appreciated. We'll see what the overnight crew does and maybe not have the full amount to raise tomorrow evening. But remember, if we'd ever like to get to the point where there's no mention of it at all, then either do a monthly subscription at PayPal or a monthly subscription at Patreon. Either one would work fine. And, you know, there's a slew of bumper stickers their mail didn't run today, so a slew of bumper stickers going to leave here tomorrow. Thanks to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in the program. Thank you so very much to everyone who keeps the program on the air by keeping the bills paid. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to midweek utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgia Stan, all around great guy. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook and
at ColeRiverMTN on Twitter. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Happy birthday. Happy birthday again, Boss Man Wayne.